Well, welcome back to Coast. Dean Slider, our special guest, his book, Fear Less. And, of course, we're going to take your calls. Share with us your anxiety attacks or your road rage episode, whether you were part of it or you were it when we come back. Welcome back. Dean Slider with us, of course. And, Dean, what's your next project, by the way?
You know, I am so engaged right now with traveling around doing workshops with this book. I haven't been able to decide what's the next thing I'm writing. But I am doing, you know, if people check on my website, I'm in the next few weeks, I'm going to be, let's see, in Cincinnati. I'm going to be in Louisville. I'm going to be in Chattanooga, Big Sur, California, some stuff in the L.A. area, then Massachusetts. So I'm all over the place.
Well, good for you. Good for you. The difficulties that people have in their life and the addictions that they have in their life, can they also rid them through techniques like you've been talking about?
Yeah, addiction in particular, thanks for bringing this up, because, you know, everyone is so aware of the opioid crisis and just what a terrible,
out of control,
devastating thing this is. At the same time, by the way, there's this other drug that kills every year in the United States. It kills 10 times as many people as opioids, and it's called cigarettes.
Yep. That's right.
And the thing is, and it's interesting because here where I live in L.A., there's a lot of 12-step meetings, and you always know where the meetings are because you see the guys outside on the sidewalk smoking cigarettes.
Smoking the cigarettes.
Right. Now, here's the story that I give, and I've got a chapter on specifically about addiction and how you can use this stuff to work with addiction. We have meetings here in Santa Monica, meditation sessions. They're open to everyone. They're free. I have them every other Tuesday night. And one girl came about 20 years old. She came a couple of times, didn't say anything. And after her second or third time, she was about to leave, and she pulled me to the side, and she said, "I just wanted to tell you that I'm a heroin addict. I've been clean for 6 months. In the meditation tonight, the peace that I felt was so deep and profound and healing. I didn't think I could ever feel like that again in this life without drugs." So, you know, you hear something like that and you think, yes, this stuff, as you were saying before, it really does work. And it's because I feel that everyone, as human beings, it's kind of our blessing and our curse that we're born with this intuition. We know there's supposed to be that kind of deep peace, that kind of, the Hindus call it ananda, bliss. We know that it's supposed to be there. And I think addicts are just people who are kind of, they're really born with an even sharper sense that that's supposed to be there. And if, you know, getting the bigger car or getting the better job or whatever doesn't do it for you, you'll try, okay, maybe this drug will give me the rush that I'm looking for. There's actually a story that not a lot of people know, and I tell this story in the book, that Bill Wilson, the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, the one who first laid out the 12 steps, which he did in the 30s, by the 50s, he realized that the 11th step, which is the key one, which says that, you know, through prayer and meditation, we made conscious contact with a higher power. He realized that the 11th step wasn't really working. That people, you know, they were saying some nice prayers and having some nice thoughts or, you know, moods, but they weren't making conscious contact with something higher. And he actually found out about Aldous Huxley and some of the other early psychedelic pioneers who were experimenting with mescaline and LSD. And Bill Wilson started dropping acid with Aldous Huxley and these guys. And he got real excited. He thought, okay, this is it. Now, this is really going to step up, really juice up the 11th step.
Right.
But, you know, then the people in the organization said, whoa, the old man's gone over the edge. This is not going to work. But in a story that very, very few people know, a little bit later, 1971, a couple of weeks before Bill Wilson died, he was taught meditation, actually by an old friend of mine. And My friend went back to the room where he left Bill meditating. He opened the door. The room was empty. He thought, what the hell happened to Bill? And it was in New England in December, freezing cold. All of a sudden, Bill burst through the front door. He'd gone down the back steps, and this was in a body racked with emphysema about 2 weeks before death. From
probably in his socks, right?
Probably, yeah. And, you know, Bill was dying from smoking all these cigarettes. And he had actually run out into the snow, breathing the fresh winter air, and then he burst through the front door shouting, this stuff works.
It does work.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take some calls for you. Let's go to Steve, truck driving in Missouri. Welcome to the program, Steve. You're on the air with us.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hi, Steven.
Oh, you know, stressing out is not worth it anymore. I've been doing this for 20 years. When I was younger, I would get stressed out so easy and come unglued. It's just not worth it.
What did you do to stop?
I just finally put it all behind me. When I had my dog with me and I'd get mad, she'd go into the sleeper. She was scared. And that's one thing that kept me from doing it anymore. I would not get mad, and I'd just reach over, pet her on the head, and everything would be good. You know, therapy dogs do help, and yeah. I'll be putting another dog in the truck here shortly once I get my new truck. And like you were saying, they have therapy dogs in colleges now, in dorms. And one reason I could think about that is because these people are going to start wondering, am I going to have a job, and how in the heck am I going to pay for this when probably there should be no reason they should be in there, maybe a technical school or something like that. Not everybody has to go to college. I've never went to college. I'm a happy camper.
Yeah, and you know, Steve, I think I'm hearing two things in what you're saying. One is, you know, that wonderful thing of having the dog there with you. The other is there's a certain piece of wisdom that some people pick up after a while where you realize, you know, why am I hitting myself over the head with this stuff? And actually, I've got a chapter about this in the book, and the chapter's titled, Would It Help? And I stole that title from the movie Bridge of Spies. You know, that's the one where Tom Hanks plays the lawyer. The true story about this Soviet spy who was captured in New York City in the 1950s. And he's on trial for his life, and the Americans want him dead, and the Russians want him dead. And Tom Hanks is his lawyer, and he tells him, listen, everyone wants you dead, so, you know, be careful. And the spy, played by Mark Rylance, thinks for a second. He says, all right. And Tom Hanks says, you don't seem worried. And he says, would it help? So there's the wisdom right there. You start stressing out, as you say, and you just ask yourself, does this help? Does this help? You know, it's like you find yourself sitting at a red light. How many times have you done this? You're sitting at a red light, and let's say you're running behind, you're behind schedule. You really want that red light to turn green faster. And you know that thing where you're sitting there trying to mentally make the red light turn green faster? And have you noticed that it doesn't work?
It's on a timer.
That's right. And so if you just realize, no matter how hard you strain trying to make that red light turn faster, for the rest of your life, absolutely positively guaranteed, it will never get green a second sooner by your stressing about it. So just hallelujah, let that go. And then think about all the other kinds of red lights in our life. Like I remember my parents, you see, who were very political, shouting at the TV set, Richard Nixon. And I used to wonder, do they know Nixon can't hear them through the TV set?
You know, that was Rudolf Abel, by the way, wasn't it?
Right, Rudolf Abel, and played by Mark Rylance, who won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor.
Back to the calls we go. We go to, thanks, Steve, by the way, out there in Missouri. We go to Mary in Snowflake, Arizona now. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Thanks, George, for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Dean, I tried this a couple years ago, and it was just a wonderful thing for me. It wasn't that expensive. I have a guest room, and I just went and bought a bunch of wild colors of paint. Like, I mean, Simpsons wild. The room itself is like a hot coral, and then it's got a band at the bottom that's like a foot tall of hot turquoise. The trim and the doors are kind of a hot periwinkle. And then I made a bunch of pillows and stuff that are wild colors. The furniture is all black and white, kind of, what do you call it, enamel. But, you know, I just decorate it with all kinds of wild colors, and I call it the salsa room. And you cannot be depressed in this room. You just can't.
That's great.
It's too much fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I'm angry, frustrated, or, depressed, I go in there with my writing pad. I sit down and write 10 things that are, you know, bumming me out. And then I crumple it up, and I have a really cool brass ashtray, and I burn it up.
That's great. I love your creativity, and I really encourage people to do this. You know, it's not one size fits all. Find the stuff that works for you. For example, I do work in prisons. I work with guys in maximum security.
And what do you work with them for?
I lead them in meditation groups.
Okay. Yeah. Anxiety, anger, all that.
Whatever they got. And I love working with prisoners. They're my favorite people to work with because they know they can't. They know that they're not going to get their happiness from their outer environment. Their outer environment is gonna just be terrible no matter what. So they really know the wisdom of, okay, I'm going to have to find it within myself. And I had one guy who we sit in a circle of these blue plastic chairs in the chapel, which is really kind of a cinder block bunker. And I noticed one guy who always sat opposite me, and I always wondered why he always sat in that chair. And it came up one night, and he said, because the door is behind me, and because in prison you never, ever sit with your back to the door. But because, you know, your safety might depend on knowing who's coming through the door. He said, I deliberately do this because this is the only time, because I feel so safe here. I know that we're here in the meditation, and Officer Mercado is out there in the lobby. No one's getting past him. And so I take advantage of that to do something that otherwise I would never do. And I just found that so moving. I said, that's the way you do it. Whatever is there, whatever you think of as like the bumps, the roadblocks on your path to serenity, that is your path.
Next up, we've got Kim in the state of Washington, west of the Rockies. Hey, Kim.
Hey. I wondered if this could help people with rage from head injuries and people with anxiety on the autism spectrum.
Yeah, it should. You know, my daughter and my son-in-law actually both are professionals who work with mostly with children who are on the autistic scale. So they're board-certified behavior analysts, which I am not. But so I've gotten a lot of insight from them, and especially with kids in the autistic scale, actually young kids in general, it's best to use the methods that have more of a physical aspect. You know, they're not going to just sit still with their eyes closed and do meditation, but doing things like, okay, breathing through the feet, or there's one lovely thing that I like to do, especially with kids, and this would often work very well with people with autism, is you sit and just sway your body back and forth like you're a metronome. So your hips are staying in one place and your head is swinging back and forth like the end of the metronome. And just let the metronome, the arc of the metronome, get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until you can't even, it's hard to even tell when you've stopped moving. And because that starts with a great big movement that any kid can get into and just gradually brings them smaller and smaller, that leads the mind into a more quiet state.
Give us the technique again for breathing through the feet.
It's the simplest thing in the world. You just you imagine, feel the soles of your feet. You know, like if I say soles of your feet, right now you've got some experience of the soles of your feet. And notice there's no effort involved. And like, am I imagining it? Am I feeling it? Maybe not sure. It doesn't matter. So we imagine or feel the soles of our feet. And then as you breathe in, just through the whole surface of the soles of your feet. Imagine you're breathing in through the soles of your feet. And if we want to go a little deeper into this, you could let the breath be a little slower, a little deeper, and notice, okay, how far up does the breath go? Does it stop at the soles of my feet? Does it go up higher through my legs? Does it maybe go all the way up to my head, something like that? And then as you breathe out, breathing out through the soles of your feet.
Tell me about some of your meetings with some of these sages around the planet.
Oh, yeah. I've been so, so lucky to meet people who are just teachers who have been doing this stuff so deeply that they've gotten to what we could call the end point of it. You know, the point of this stuff is that as we get clearer and clearer, that, as I was saying before, we're not just a little wave, we're not just a little organism isolated in time and space. We are the big picture. We are the continuum. We are beingness, awareness without any boundaries. And that can sound like very grandiose, abstract language, but the more you do these kind of meditative methods, the more you find out, oh no, I really am that vastness. So the point is to get there to where you don't have to meditate anymore. The point of this stuff is not to have to do it anymore. You're just breathe all the time. Yeah, I'm the ocean. Why would I ever think I'm a wave? So I've been around people like that, and some of them are, one of them is a wonderful man from Jamaica named Muji. Another is an Englishman who's very different personality from, you know, Muji's a warm, outgoing Jamaican who, when he's talking about enlightenment, he'll sometimes quote Bob Marley. And then there's another one of my teachers, Rupert Spira, and he's, you know, really a buttoned-up Englishman from Oxford, so his style is very, very different. But they're both coming from the same place. They're both coming from that place of ocean, and when you sit there and you're close to them, you know, they talk so clearly about this stuff, but they don't even have to talk. You just look in their eyes and, wow, there it is. You know, you may have seen the trailer for, there's a new documentary film about the Pope, Pope Francis, a man of his word. And at the very end of that trailer, there's one shot where the Pope looks straight in the camera and he smiles. And I saw that shot and I went, wow, there it is. He's got some of that juice too.
Interesting take. Let's take one more quick call before the break. Keith in Ohio, welcome to the show. Hi, Keith.
Hello, George.
Hey there.
Very good show. First of all, George, I do want to wish you, because as you know, our birthday's on the same day.
It's coming up.
And it's, yes, definitely.
Week away.
Have a good party because, as I told you, I'm going to be the big 6-0. Oh, my God.
Happy birthday, Keith.
As far as fears, I can understand many of these factors, but I have always had, and I haven't always been blind, but I'm blind now for the past 20 years. I get claustrophobic so intensely, especially now, feeling that I can't, if I'm caught in something, it's not easy for me to get out as much, being blind, especially if I'm in a crowded venue, a bus, or even something enclosed.
What do you think of that?
Okay.
Dean, we've got the, I tell you what, I'm going to have you answer that when we come back, okay? Let's do that. And Dean's website, fearlessbook.net, is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. Do follow us on Twitter, and we will be back with more. And welcome back to our final segment with Dean Slider. We are going to end the program tonight with our tribute to our fallen soldiers as our Memorial Day tribute that we do every year. Dean, let's bring you back here and talk about where we're headed and the other caller that we had. Let's go back. Let's see. Oh, he hung up on us, but I'll let you answer his question.
Right, because he was asking about claustrophobia. And
he's blind.
And he's blind. A little story about one of the prisoners that I work with. I mentioned before I work with guys in maximum security. And every once in a while, one of the guys will stop showing up to our Thursday night sessions. And it's because he's been brought up on charges and they put him in what they call administrative segregation, which is a polite term for solitary confinement. And one particular case, this was a guy who, when I first met him, he was self-described as a drug gang assassin from the streets of Newark.
Mm-hmm.
And he witnessed his first murder at the age of 7. I actually kind of tell his life story.
Poor kid was tainted from that age.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, he was standing on the street corner. The friendly local drug dealer was handing him a dollar to buy candy with when the drive-by shooting happened, and little 7-year-old got the blood spattered all over him. And, you know, where does your life go from there? So when I met him, he was in his early 30s. He'd spent a third of his life locked up. And it's interesting because a friend brought him into our meeting, and he was so suspicious. He was just looking around through these hooded eyes like, you know, what the hell is this all about? But he did the meditation. He started to soften up a little. Next week came back, softened up a little more. And after about a month, he took me aside. He said, okay, I got one question. How can I purify murder? And with a couple of years later, I had moved out to California by then. And at this point, he was so transformed, he'd become like that little kid before he witnessed that shooting. He'd like recovered that pure heart. It was so wonderful to see. So one day, I'm out where I live now in California, and I go to my post office box, and there's a little package from him, a little lumpy package. And I open it up, and his hair had been in long cornrows. I open up this package, and there was his hair, which he'd cut off, and there was a little note said, please donate this to Locks of Love for some kid who's lost his hair to chemotherapy.
Let's go to Joe in Long Island, New York,
yeah.
East of the Rockies. Joseph, go ahead.
Hi, Dane. A couple of quick questions. I remember being, taking a trail map at Glacier National Park, and I'm following this trail, and it's just a yellow sheet of paper. I'm doing well, but I end up on, basically, it's like a 3-mile ledge, about 10,000 feet up, and I'm saying, they're not giving you the details here, So I had taken a course on meditation online. It was actually on Coursera from Princeton University. It was a free course. And one of the things I liked is they said you can pick up subtleties in meditation. Or I was thinking like important details that you're not otherwise being informed of, in your life. So I'd ask you about that. And also with the Psalms, the idea of like maybe personalizing the Psalms, like Psalm 103 says, he'll heal all your diseases. You could say, well, he'll heal all my ailments, personalize it maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As for your second point, I would relate this back to the lady with her story about the way she painted her room. I feel be creative, personalize everything, find out what works for you, not necessarily what works for the next person. And as for the first thing, picking up on the subtleties, it's one of the things that I find one of the best benefits of having at this point meditated in my life for many, many years, is that I do a whole lot less thinking and a lot more seeing. I had something happen one day when these two friends of mine, a guy and his girlfriend, they'd been living together for a while, and my doorbell rang. I opened the door. They were standing there, and I said, oh, you're getting married. And they said, well, how did you know? And it's not that, oh, I've got some weird power of ESP. It was just obvious. you stop thinking about this and that. You just look. I could see it on them. It's like great athletes. When LeBron James is charging the net and 5 defenders are on him, he doesn't have time to think about this guy's going to move this way, this guy's going to move this way.
He's going for the basket.
And he sees a microsecond before it happens, he sees where the opening is going to be, and he goes through that. And more your life becomes like that. You're just going through the opening instead of knocking against stuff.
I'm amazed, Dean, we haven't gotten a lot of calls on road raging.
Yeah. Well, maybe everyone's that heard us is breathing through their feet and they solved the problem. I want to mention that about my prisoner guy started to tell his story. So the claustrophobia part is when he got locked up for 3 months in solitary and they put him in a room above the boiler. So it was 100 degrees all the time. I mean, it's completely brutal treatment. And what he did was he said, okay, it's hot. I'm taking off my clothes. And I'm closing my eyes, and he just basically meditated for 3 months.
Jeez.
He said, I'm going on retreat. He said, okay, my outer situation is just terrible. I'm turning inside, and all the scriptures say that, you know, the kingdom of heaven is within you. The Buddha says nirvana is within you. He came back after 3 months, and he gave me a deep bow. He said, thanks so much. I'm really glad I knew how to do that.
Next up, we have David in Chicago, first-time caller for him. Hi, David.
Hi, George. It's an honor to meet you.
Thank you, sir.
This is a question for Dean. I actually am starting to do some meditation. I'm kind of a beginner, and I had a question. Are there any types of crystals that I can use to surround myself with as I meditate in order to raise my frequency?
Well, you know, if there's anything like that you like to have, I feel fine, no harm. But I like the idea of not depending on anything external. What I would say is, if you go to my website, there's a page called Meditate Now, and it's completely free. There's guided meditation audio tracks that will walk you through it. You see how simple it is, and you'll see that, just like in the story I just told, you know, if you're put in a solitary or if suddenly you have a stroke, you're in the nursing home, you don't have access to your crystals or whatever, you don't want to be dependent. This is my approach. You don't want to be dependent on anything. It's all the great masters say, it's all inside you. And then, you know, anything outside you that you happen to have, okay, that's gravy. But don't take it don't give it too much importance.
Text and tweets. We've got Tom in the studio. What do you have, Tom?
We have one from Sam in Wisconsin. He says, I may have missed it, but please have Dean talk about proper breathing and how it relates to panic attacks.
Okay, you did miss it. He did talk about breathing, but I'll let you do it again for us, Dean.
Yeah, okay. So first of all, the proper breathing anytime, and especially in a panic attack, close your mouth, breathe through your nose, and it's good to practice this what I call the Darth Vader breath, where and again do the fire drill before the fire, sit sometime when everything's fine, and you just fool around with a little constriction in the back of your throat so that it sounds like Darth Vader as you breathe in and out. And that will go a very long distance toward suppressing the fight-or-flight syndrome, turning off the sympathetic nervous system, which induces panic, and turning on the parasympathetic nervous system, which brings about relaxation.
You know, Dean, since you've been doing this, how many years now?
Oh, geez, since 1968, whatever that is. It's getting to be embarrassing how long it's been.
That is, but it's paid off for you, hasn't it, in terms of what you've been able to do to help people?
Yeah, you know, it's just so fulfilling, and by the way, I'm so grateful to be able to do things like this radio show, and then, you know, I get emails from people all over the country and in other countries.
Oh, huge.
And just saying, you know, I've gotten emails from, the last time I was on your show, as a matter of fact, George, one email I got, I'll never forget, from a guy in Utah. He said, you know, I was sexually abused as a kid, and then I got into all kinds of drug abuse. And then after years, I heard about meditation, and I tried for years to do it, but it was so hard. So then I got your book, and I saw how easy it is. And I feel like for the first time in my life, the clouds are parting. And, boy, it's just nothing's more fulfilling than that.
Is the other book still in publication, Natural Meditation?
Yeah, Natural Meditation, which actually, after I was on your show the last time, a few months later, that got the award for the best mind-body-spirit book.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
And let us take another quick call, maybe a few more. Let's go to Joe in Miami, Florida. Joseph, welcome to the program. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Okay, Joe. Thank you.
Listen, I look at anxiety in a more complicated way than the way that it's being described here. I think anxiety is when you're not fooling yourself or occupying yourself with earthly things, when you have these questions of all the mysteries in life and you're really not in control. You kid yourself. You know, you're in control on the earth, but as soon as you peer deep into things and you forget about all the things on the earth and you look at it just plainly, I can't see how someone cannot have anxiety. You know, it's almost like
The question is, how soon can you get rid of it? What do you think, Dean?
You know, there's a saying in from the Zen masters, which your question reminds me of, where they say, you know, at the beginning, it's like the mountains are mountains and the rivers are rivers. And then after a while, it's like, oh, no, everything's all mixed up. The mountains aren't just mountains anymore. The rivers aren't just rivers anymore. And then you go deeper into things. And finally, you know what? The mountains are mountains and the rivers are rivers. So you're right. When you start to peer to question deeply into these things, it can seem very disquieting, like, whoa, things are not the way I thought they were. But there are people who we call sages, enlightened sages, who have gotten to the end of the journey of inquiring into these things. People like this Socrates and the Buddha and Jesus and some modern people. And what they all say, and they all say it in different language, but ultimately they say, you know what? Ultimately, the big picture is everything's fine.
Do you have to be particularly religious?
No.
To be able to pull any of this off?
No. You know, Christ was not a Christian. The Buddha was not a Buddhist. All of that came later. They were people who woke up. They were people who woke up to reality. They woke up to the deepest reality. You know, they got below the level of all the individual waves of life sloshing around into that deep, silent, vast, boundless ocean of ultimate reality. And to me, they're all saying to every one of us, come on in, the water's fine. And it's easy. They all say it's easy.
It sure is. Dean, I want to thank you for being on the program. Very quickly, where do you get Fearless?
Okay, you can go to Amazon or any bookstore and come to my website, fearlessbook.net.
Super. Dean, thanks for being on the show again.
Thank you, George.
Appreciate it. This, of course, as we wrap up Memorial Day, our tribute to veterans who have given their lives for our freedom. This is very special, something I recorded many, many years ago.
He was getting old and punchy, and his hair was falling fast, and he sat around the Legion telling stories of the past, of a war that he had fought in, and the deeds that he had done, and his exploits with his buddies. They were heroes, everyone. And though sometimes to his neighbors his tales became a joke, all his buddies listened, for they knew whereof he spoke. But we'll hear his tales no longer, for old Bob has passed away, and the world's a little poor, for a soldier died today. And now he won't be mourned by many, just his children and his wife, for he lived an ordinary, very quiet sort of life. He held a job, he raised a family, quietly going on his way, and the world won't notice passing, though a soldier died today. You know, when politicians leave this earth, their bodies lie in state, while thousands note their passing and proclaim that they were great. Papers tell of their life stories from the time that they were young. But the passing of a soldier, it goes unnoticed and unsung. The politician's stipend and the style in which he lives are sometimes disproportionate to the services that he gives. While the ordinary soldier who offered up his all is paid off with a medal, and perhaps a pension, small, so it's easy to forget them, for it was so long ago that our Bobs and Jims and Johnnies and Jessicas went to battle, but we know. It was not the politicians with their compromise employees who won for us the freedom that our country now enjoys. Now, should you find yourself in danger with your enemies at hand, would you really want some cop-out with his ever-waffling stand? Or would you want a soldier who has sworn to defend his home, his kin, his country, and fight until the end? It was just a common soldier, and his ranks are growing thin, but his presence should remind us that we may need his like again. When his countries are in conflict, then we find the soldier's part is to clean up all the troubles that the politicians start. If we cannot do him honor while he's here to hear the praise, then at least let's give him homage at the ending of his days. Perhaps just a simple headline in the paper that might say, "Our country is in mourning for a soldier died today."
Civilians and military on both sides during World War II, 73 million people died. 73 million. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Greg Bishop, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.